Hello and welcome to Press TV's debate. I'm Arzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, on Friday, at least four more Palestinians were killed, at least 100 others wounded. Now, the Israeli crackdown was taking place at the same time Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu made an unannounced visit to Oman. Muscat is now saying that it is time to accept Israel in the region, a move that Egypt and Jordan have taken a while ago. And also Saudi Arabia and Bahrain have gotten on the Israeli bandwagon. But why do we see more Arab regimes turning their backs on their Palestinian brothers for Tel Aviv? And what does it all mean?
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu made an unannounced trip to Oman late Thursday and met Sultan Qaboos. The visit was not publicized until Netanyahu returned to Israel the next day. A joint statement issued by Netanyahu's office said the two leaders discussed ways to advance the peace process in the Middle East and other issues of mutual interest regarding regional stability. Sultan Qaboos received Netanyahu and his entourage warmly at his palace in the capital, Muscat. The head of the Mossad spy agency and the top security advisor were among officials accompanying the Israeli premier. Netanyahu hailed the visit as special. He posted a video of his reception and meeting on Twitter, boasting, quote, "We are making history." The trip was uncommon but not unprecedented. In 1994, then-Israeli Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin made the first trip to Oman. 2 years later, his successor Shimon Peres went there again and opened a trade representative office. Israel and Oman do not have diplomatic relations. Israel is only officially recognized by two Arab states, Egypt and Jordan. In recent years, Israel has been trying to improve its relations with some Persian Gulf Arab countries, including Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, the UAE, and Qatar. Days before Netanyahu's trip, Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas paid a three-day visit to Oman and also met Qaboos. The meetings have raised the possibility that Oman might be trying to mediate for a peace plan between Israelis and Palestinians. However, not everyone in the Palestinian territories is happy with Oman's possible mediatory efforts. Palestinian resistance groups have condemned Netanyahu's visit and urged Arab countries to support the oppressed people of Palestine. Hamas warned about the dangerous consequences of Netanyahu's visit for the people of Palestine. The Islamic Jihad movement said Oman cleared Netanyahu of the crimes committed against Palestinians by welcoming him to the country. Iran also reacted to the surprise visit, saying Netanyahu seeks to divide Muslim countries and cover up the 70 years of Israeli occupation and killing of Palestinians.
I'd like to welcome my guest to the program, journalist and political commentator, Ms. Maxine Dover, out of New York, and senior analyst and researcher at Bayan Center for Studies, Ms. Catherine Shachtham, out of London. Thank you both for being with us. Well, let's start this off in New York. And Maxine, well, what is your perspective about Netanyahu's visit to Oman?
I think it is a huge, huge step in the right direction, and a step in the direction of reality. 5 years ago, I was at a meeting known as the Clinton Global Initiative, and one of the speakers was Muhtar Kent. Muhtar Kent, whose background is half American and half Turkish, happened to be the president of Coca-Cola International. At that point, he said, and this is 5 years ago, he said, the Middle East is like a table, and a table needs four legs. And he described one of the legs as the general market of the Middle East, all of the countries of the Middle East, and one of the legs as funds, money, and called that out as the Saudi Arabian position. And another area he called out was labor, and the forces of manufacturing, looking at Egypt and Jordan. And the fourth leg, the one that needs to be there for the table to balance, was technology, was technical advancement, was agricultural advancement. And there he called out Israel's entrepreneurship as a great source for the entire region. This morning, Al Jazeera noted that the Sultan called Israel one of the states of the region, recognizing the reality of the political situation.
Okay.
the Palestinian people can only benefit from a resolution of these problems and from getting the political and economic solution to a much more normal base. And that will benefit not only the region, but very specifically the Palestinian people and the Israeli people.
All right, stay with me, Maxine. Let me get Catherine in on this discussion. Catherine, your take on all this. What exactly is going on in your perspective that Muscat all of a sudden is saying that Israel must now be accepted in the region?
Well, I think we have a very bad case of moral relativism. I don't understand why Oman would now, particularly now, there's an irony to this timing. We're approaching Arbaeen and the commemoration of Imam Hussein's martyrdom, so I just find it a little bit ironic that now Oman decides to welcome Israel into the fold and actually acknowledge, you know, this political reality. I actually disagree with what Maxine said, and I don't understand the analogy other than it's profoundly racist to be labeling countries and you know, labeling them as having particular technological advancement or certain areas of expertise, but you know, whatever. What I would say is that, again, you know, to say that Israel is needed in the region is a fallacy. Palestine has a right to exist because Palestine has a history, a tradition. It is a nation, it is a sovereign nation on its land, and it deserves to stay this way. And so to advance that it's okay somehow to bend to bullying, because this is what is happening today in Oman, is bending over to bullying and admitting that might is right, and actually rationalizing the many war crimes that have been done and actually claim that peace is necessary. Yes, peace is necessary, but you cannot have peace without justice. And I do believe that the Palestinians, you know, have a right to that justice. And until Israel is being held into account, I don't think this is going to happen. And the problem that we have is that the very premise of Israel, the very idea that Israel has a right on Palestine, you know, over Palestine more than Palestinians do, needs to be reviewed. We continue to chase our tail because we refuse to address the very issue. And just because it has gone on for decades now, we say that it's okay, we have to be reasonable, we have to accept reality. The reality remains that this land was stolen away from Palestinians, and this land needs to be somehow getting back to its owners, in the sense that I'm not saying that Israelis have to disappear. We're going to have to find a solution that works for everybody. And the solution today is not to deny one people the right over their land just because another has more guns to point at those people than the others.
Okay.
It can't work this way. This is not how international law works.
Well, Maxine, Palestinian groups, resistance groups, have condemned the move and basically condemned Oman for making this move. Your assessment, is this actually the Omani regime stabbing the Palestinians in the back? Or some say that perhaps Muscat actually wants to be a political broker in the region?
I don't see anything wrong with that. I think it would be a source that the Palestinian people could trust. It is a fellow Arab people, and there is no Western imposition of ideas. It would be a regional solution and a solution between states in the region. You know, you mentioned the word decades. Let's go back a little further, like to the beginning of recorded civilization, like to the beginning of Abraham, Isaac, and Ishmael, the founding fathers of both the Arab peoples and the Jewish peoples. This is the week that the stories of Abraham's history are read in synagogues, and the stories of the miracle of Ishmael's survival in the desert with his mother Hagar. These are stories that are thousands and thousands of years old. They do not deny the rights of either people to land on which to live and grow and bloom. And that's something that's not decades old. That's from the beginning of man's history. The Abrahamic faiths have been together,
Maxine,
for thousands
Maxine,
of years.
I'm trying to understand.
To
Maxine,
find a way
I'm trying
for them
to
continue to be together.
Trying to understand your point here. You're talking about, as you said, history. And we know it is very interesting that, of course, we know that Palestinians Muslim and Christian Palestinians live side by side, of course, with the Jews. And it wasn't really an issue until the whole Zionist element came about. But that's neither here or there at this point in time. But I'm looking at exactly, Catherine, at this point in time, as you said, Catherine, it is quite curious, why now? Why do you think we're seeing? We saw earlier, of course, in the early days, we saw Egypt, we saw Jordan recognize Israel. We've seen Saudi Arabia getting very close to Israel, especially mm-hmm. with the situation that took place in mm-hmm. Syria. And now we've seen also Bahrain and now Oman. Why? Why do you think that that is the case? Are they being bought off? Are they being threatened? Or how do you assess this?
Well, I think we need, first of all, to look at this as a regional issue. I mean, in geopolitics, there's been a realignment of late. I'm sure you noticed that, not everything is right in Saudi Arabia. And I think that Israel is looking for new partners in the region, essentially now that the GCC is literally falling apart because of Saudi Arabia's influence. Saudi Arabia has, is upset with Oman, is upset with Kuwait, is upset with Qatar. So it doesn't leave many countries left, within the GCC. And I think that Israel is looking to maybe capitalize or to consolidate its ties, in the GCC. And Oman, of course, makes sense. Geopolitically, it does make sense. It shares a border with Yemen, for example. Saudi Arabia is at war with Yemen. And of course, Oman has very close diplomatic ties and commercial ties with Iran, as well as other GCC countries. So I think that they're trying to do is actually leverage Oman's influence within the region and the fact that Oman has been a very neutral state so far and has been able to broker peace, for example, in between Yemen and Saudi Arabia to an extent, at least it has tried. And I think that Oman is quite well respected in the sense that it's very neutral, it's very rational in its way of approaching politics, at least so far. But we have to also take into account that Oman is suffering financially. And so I'm assuming that Israel went to Muscat to actually promise, a financial, I would say, reward for political cooperation. That would make sense, given the fact that Oman cannot count on Saudi Arabia anymore, at least not to the extent that it used to. And so promises, I'm sure, have been made to that effect. This is something that they usually have done with the Saudi as well. They're promising technological advancement. They're promising political, carte blanche should Mohammed bin Salman decide to behead a people or two and to look the other way. They're promising many things. And I think that Jordan fell to it. And I think that Egypt as well has benefited greatly with its so-called friendship with Israel. I think that Oman is the latest domino to fall to that agenda, basically. And it's sad to say because, I think it's not about political loyalty, but it's about, I think, morality. I mean, at which point do we say enough blood has been shed? People are still outraged at the murder of Jamal Khashoggi, but they have to realize that this is a reality that Palestinians are living every day. They are being butchered in the street every day. No one is raising a finger in outrage. So, again, I would say it's a very, very bad case of moral relativism. Okay. And this is the reality that we live in today. It's not a good one. And I don't think that we should just bow to it. I think we should speak up.
Well, Maxine, how much of this do you think is related to U.S. President Donald Trump's deal of the sentry policy, as he calls it, in this region?
Well, let me just go back to some of the comments that my colleague in London has just made. The first comment that Oman has retained a position of respect as a neutral negotiator are very important. You can't say and compliment a country on its ability to be a negotiator, and in one sentence say, oh, but wait a minute, it's not really neutral. I think the fact that it has been a successful and neutral negotiator is essential to going forward. How are these related to the policies of Donald Trump? I think it's related to the policy more of America, which the policies that would hope to see a resolution of the problems in the Middle East. And this is not something that comes out of the Trump regime only. This is something that was attempted by Kerry, by John Kerry when he was Secretary of State. This goes back to the Obama administration. This goes back further and further. America's interest would be far well served by having a peaceful region rather than a region that is threatened continuously by war. So I think that the fact that the Trump administration has continued these policies and is really enhancing the attempt to find a peace solution is very, very important and makes the potential of this very valid.
Okay, a peace solution. That was an interesting choice of words, a peace solution, because, of course, we've seen, especially since March, Maxine, and after the U.S. declared that Jerusalem was the capital of Israel, we have seen more and more Palestinians losing their lives every day. Perhaps that is others. That's another definition of peace. But and usually in the world today, actually, that perhaps is a very sad situation, condemnation, that what Donald Trump has done, what the U.S. has done, is actually causing more pain, more suffering to the Palestinians, and basically it appears ignoring it all and feeling that is a solution. Catherine, you
take... Let me raise a question.
What? I'm sorry?
Let me raise one question.
Go ahead.
Let me raise a question to your comments.
Go ahead.
The peace solution that is being sought and now encouraged by the recognition of Israel as a state in the region by Oman, which doesn't negate in any way a Palestinian state, is being fostered as a way to go forward.
Okay.
What would happen if Hamas had some sort of a resolution of soul and said, by the way, people of Gaza, why don't we go forward? Why don't we build an economic machine here?
Okay, Maxine. Come on. We all know that Gaza is in the hands, that Israel is actually controlling everything that goes in and out. Catherine, your take on all of this. I mean, we have, on the one hand, we had Donald Trump and talking about basically this way forward. Your perspective on what all of this means when he talks about, Trump talks about his deal of the century. What are we talking about here? And how does that fit into what we are seeing in the region with these Arab regimes?
Well, number one, you know, the idea again that the United States of America is looking to forward peace in the Middle East is a fallacy. I mean, come on, they're dropping a bomb everywhere they can. So no, I refute what your guest in New York is actually saying and stating. Number two, as far as this, you know, deal of the century goes, what essentially it entails is the disappearing of Palestine as we know it. Because if you uproot a people, actually, you know, lock them into a little corner of the world that is not even remotely resembling what the nation should look like and did look like once upon a time, it is denying them the history, the tradition, the culture, the identity, and everything else in between. This is what Israel wants. It wants to redact history so that, you know, one day we will wake up in a few decades, hopefully, and completely forget that the Palestinians ever existed, and that would wash them of their crimes. Because, you know, if there are nobody left to be cried over, then therefore they committed no genocide. This is what Israel is looking to do. This is what the Zionist state is looking to do, and we are supposed to go along with it because, again, they have bigger guns than other people do, than the resistance do. And you know, I'm actually quite tired of systematically having guests trying to defend Zionism and deflecting away from the issue at hand by arguing again, you know, terrorism, or arguing that, you know, self-defense and the right to resistance is actually not a right. It's only a right when they are the one wielding it. I refuse this. We have to stand on principle, and I'm sorry to say, but, you know, they don't have the moral high ground. They do not have the religious high ground. They don't have any high ground whatsoever. You know, what they're doing is actually allowing for criminal regimes to continue to butcher civilians just because they can. And this is the reality. There is no deal of the century. The only deal that they have is, you know, to disappear Palestine and Palestinians. And how can we even imagine this? How could we stand for it? How could we sit here and actually, you know, debate, you know, this reality? Of course not. Of course no. Palestine needs to stay Palestine. Palestinians have a right, and we need to keep saying it until we're blue in the face. And even if we're the last people on earth saying it, it still needs to be said. The truth is a truth, and a right can never be a wrong, and a wrong will never be a right.
Well, Maxine, how much of what we're seeing, for example, in dealing with what Oman has just done and other Arab countries or regimes, how much of this do you think can be attributed to Washington and London? How big of a role do you see them playing in all of this?
I think we should concentrate on the values in the region. And if Oman is the leader of this negotiation, all the better. To imagine what the deal of the century is going to contain is exactly that. It's an imagination. None of us, not the American journalists, not the world journalists, not the regional journalists, not even the British journalists, have a real idea of what the so-called deal of the century is going to contain. And until that is visible and on the table, any commentary is just that, an
imagination. Well, we can comment on what we have seen. I believe the commentary is apropos. We can definitely comment on what we have seen so far. And obviously, Maxine, what we have seen so far is basically the disappearance of Palestine and Palestinian land and the continued oppression of Palestinians. Now, Catherine, as I said in my intro, it is ironic that at the same time that Palestinians have taken up this latest struggle and are going towards a couple of days actually protesting, more and more of them are being killed. At the same time, we see their Arab brothers actually going in the direction of Tel Aviv. So what is key here? What has to happen for the Palestinians? I think this is the question of the day, actually, to continue to resist and be able to basically get what they're trying to, despite what their Arab cousins are doing to them.
Well, it's very difficult to say, but I think that the Palestinians have only themselves left to defend them. I don't think that they can expect any help from, you know, Arab neighbors. I think that they have proven already that they are quite willing and ready to sell their soul to the devil, and that would be a capital D here. And that they do not care. It's terrible to say, but you know, I don't think that anyone, you know, might it be Jordan or Egypt or, you know, especially Saudi Arabia, do not care about what happens to the Palestinian people. And so far, I think that the Palestinian cause has been held, you know, as a flag for the likes of Saudi Arabia and Jordan to pretend to actually be honorable regimes when indeed they are not, because everything they have done so far has been, you know, stabbing Palestinians in the back and abandoning them. The sad reality is that there are many countries still standing with Palestinians, but Palestinians seem to insist to actually bite those, you know, those hands and to not stand with them, which is a pity. But I think that ultimately, at the end of the day, for people to be freed, resistance needs to come from within, not from without. And I think they only have their strength to actually carry them through, and that's enough. You know, history will tell you that, you know, people can actually prevail against, you know, the most murderous of regime. Saudi Arabia should take note on that one. And I do believe that Palestinians in the end, you know, will carry on the struggle and will actually succeed. And I would argue that they already have, by standing in their own truth and actually denouncing tyranny is already a victory. To speak up in the face of tyranny is okay. Victory enough sometimes.
All right. And on that
note, you know, we must take it. We must take victory wherever we find
but
it.
Who is, all right.
I appreciate both of you. So sorry.
Among the Palestinians.
So sorry. We are out of time. I wish we could extend this. Thanks so
perhaps
much, Maxine.
The Palestinians are
journalist
being attacked
and political
by
commentator Maxine Dover out of New York and senior analyst and researcher at Albion Center for Studies, Catherine Shachtam out of London. As always, viewers, we appreciate you being with us on another debate. Hopefully we'll see you same time, same place tomorrow. I'm Marzia Hashmi. Bye for now.